Welcome to Legal Moves Podcast. My name is Zachary Strebeck. I'm a California game lawyer, and I'm the host of the show. Today, my guest is a developer that I met while I was walking through the Indie Mega Booth at PAX Prime recently. His game, To Leave, was really fun, and I thought he would be an excellent guest for the show. So, welcome to Jorge Blasio.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, sir.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. Can you tell me a little bit about your background? How did you get into game development?
Well, I've always wanted to be a game developer since I was in high school. Me and a friend, we will always do every school project. We will turn it into a video game. We went into a computer science program, and every time they asked us for a course project, if it was something about programming or something about database systems, we always turned it over and it ended up making a video game. So since our early age, we wanted to do that. My friend specifically, he designed little games since he was 13, and basically when we met, we loved games so much that we wanted to make that for a living. Mm-hmm. So later on, we went to the same university and ended up deciding that the time was right in order for us to begin making games. In the beginning, we wanted to go outside to maybe the U.S. Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about that yet. Where are you from? Where do you live?
We are from Ecuador. I am from Ecuador. Yeah. So in Ecuador, there's no industry. We're the only ones. So at the beginning, we wanted to maybe we can go to the U.S. and work for some big guy like Bungie it was really hard for us to, and also really expensive for us to end up studying in a big university in the U.S. or whatever. So we ended up deciding that maybe we can do our own thing down here, try to get to the big leagues on our own. And we ended up working for almost 4 years now, and we ended up getting there at a little bit at least. I mean, we are now showcasing our game in big events like PAX and E3 and the sorts. So I think we are maybe getting there, and when the game finally come out, hopefully it will be successful.
I hope so too. So are you still in university, or did you finish and then it's been 4 years since you graduated?
No, I studied for 4 years.
Okay.
My degree needed at least 5.5 years in order to be completed.
Okay.
But I dropped out right now. So basically, it's been already a year since I haven't picked up any courses for me to go through. Because I'm basically working full time on the game right now,
yeah.
As well as most of my partners that work in the game too.
What were you studying before you dropped out?
Computer science.
Okay, so they don't have game development classes there.
No, right? There's no such thing as game development courses here in Ecuador. They want to implement some kind of maybe classes, mm-hmm. Not a whole career at the beginning, but they do not have people experienced in game development in order to create these classes. Since we are we have so tight bonds with the university, mm-hmm. they have asked us if we can later on contribute to create this program.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Because
class at some point.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Yeah. Because we're the only ones that have already field experience in game development that can really transmit something interesting to students.
Awesome. So what is your current relationship with the university? I know that they're a supporter of your company, right?
Yeah, exactly. Even though we are not studying right now. And through the years of university, we made really good friends with a bunch of professors in our career. They really liked our enthusiasm regarding making games, even though it was not their, like, not specifically their core, the thing that they were teaching at the moment. Like, let's say you have a, we had a teacher about in investigative methods, and we basically all we talked about was making video games and how can we achieve this and how can we start making the company and what people do we need. So all those things ended up cutting up with them, and finally they when we ended up deciding that we had to do the games in that moment. We had to just throw ourselves out there. We were gonna, in the beginning, we were gonna make a bank loan. So basically the 10 of us that were at the moment had to undergo the process of asking the bank for money, and then we will pile all that all that money up and fund the company.
Right.
But luckily, they the university to the ears of the director of an investigation center in the university got the news that we were doing this,
right,
and that we were really enthusiastic about making games because of all the teachers that knew about this. Most of them worked for him, so at that moment, he wanted to create an academic laboratory for making video games because he was in talks with Sony,
okay,
to create one of the first Latin American academic Sony development laboratories. So that laboratory would have PS3 dev kits, PS Vita dev kits. Eventually, it will get PS4 dev kits and Morpheus dev kits.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be something for students to be able to create and explore different things with Sony technology, which is beneficial for both the university and for Sony. So they were working together towards that. So he wanted to create a team, a core team, to be able to start experimenting with stuff that was interested in using it, and that would not like leave it behind after a couple of months that the interest was gone.
Right.
So he called us. Well, basically, he called my partner, and I told him that if we wanted, we could start working on the academic group that was going to be formed. So we thought it really hard because even though we wanted to do our own, we knew the high risk that would take to get bank loans for everybody.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any money at all. We haven't even completed the university, so we were just high school graduates.
Right.
And, yeah, so ended up deciding that if we were gonna take this risk of making games for a living, we could at least at first do it with something that would not be, with some money that would not be that would not account us for, like, it will not make us pay a bunch of money,
right,
if we failed. So we ended up taking up his offer, and in the end, they gave us space, they gave us machines, like PCs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We had to put some of our stuff too, like we had to put some of our instruments, some of our tablets for the artists.
Okay.
But in the end, they have given us a lot of structure, you know.
Yeah.
Like the building we are in, even though it's a little bit far away from everything, it has a good infrastructure of network. It has a high speed internet connection. It has an IT team ready for managing any problems that the servers would have or the PCs would have. So in the end, all this stuff, it was going to come out of our pocket. So it's a great help. So even though they wanted us to make games for academic purposes only, we were really stubborn. So we decided that, okay, they want us to do that, but we're going to do our own thing. We're going to do, we're going to create games for, commercial purposes. We wanted to make this brand, get out there and get to be known. So, we always pushed that way, even though I think at the beginning they really didn't like it because they really wanted to, the academic program to rise up. Mm-hmm. But when in the end, one of the things that really helped was that when Sony came down to see the possible installations, they needed to be sure if they were well prepared, if they had the responsible security and everything. So when they came down, the director of the center, he told us, "Okay, guys, Sony's coming down, and you may want to get something ready for them. Like if you've been working on something, because we already had been working for a long while in a couple of stuff. Like we had before to leave, we had like three games that we worked on, three prototypes at least. They were not even completely pre-produced, so they were prototypes. One of them was really, really we were really into it. Like we were working on that for at least good 3 months or more. But he told us, okay, you want to have something ready that you can show them. And we were working on this side project, and this since if we wanted to make something commercial, the university wanted to see if that was possible. So he, instead of waiting for us like 3 years, they wanted us to make something little, something smaller, like something that we can sell and see if we can truly begin selling stuff. So we started making this little game that supposedly was gonna take like around 6 months, and
never does. Right?
It was just never works that way. Yeah. So we put an artist and an a programmer and sometimes the creative director went through their working stations and gave them some feedback, but they work on To Leave, on the first playable game level of To Leave that used a bunch of systems of our main game that we were working at the moment, and it was fun. It looked really cool, and a lot of the team really liked it. Like even though we were all working on the other main project at that moment, we went through their through their working stations, and we were really invested in giving them feedback and trying to make the game better. So everybody liked this little game that was making a lot, was being really loud in our heads. So we ended up deciding that if the whole team was thinking about this little game, maybe we should just focus all our efforts towards that, because we're working on this main big game that probably is going to take us at least 5 years to complete.
Oh,
and
okay.
What I'm saying is, like, right, 5 years from a perspective of someone who has never made games. So it could have been probably 7 to 10 years. I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean,
right,
I don't even know right now how to estimate that kind of stuff yet, like really well. But we ended up deciding everybody has to go here, and we ended up like sleeping and living in the building for at least 2 weeks. I remember my parents sent me breakfast at least three times a week for the whole team, which was really nice of them. And we ended up just working on To Leave. So when the time came, Sony came down, we showed the game. They really, really liked it. And not only the game and the concept of the game, because even though the story was not yet in there, mm-hmm. We pitched the story to them. What the thing that came out the most for them was specifically that a group of people was able to come together and work together in this vacuum of the industry, because basically we are completely isolated.
Right? Yeah.
We're the only ones here. We had no previous knowledge of making games whatsoever. No one to guide us, because none of the teachers, even though they were really good teachers at their subjects, they were not able to guide us on specific game development problems. Mm-hmm. And there was nobody but ourselves guiding the whole process. Even if it was creative, or even if it was like the management process of the team. Mm-hmm. So we did all this, and they saw that. They saw that we were able to create something that was playable and could be a game someday. So they were really interested in that. And they said to the not only to us, but to the guys directing managing the center, that this was the only way that this was going to work and this was going to shine in the end. It's if we ended up becoming something commercial and right. Do not be stuck at some academic program. If we were only meant to be working for an academic program, then Sony told the directors of the center that we were going to end up being stuck and end up leaving because of boredom. So
yes, yes, you need to have that commercial release.
Exactly. You need to be independent in like
yep.
in all the things that you're managing and be able to get that thing out there and get people's feedback and not leave it for some like school project or whatever. Right. So
especially when a game takes years and years to make.
Exactly.
You need to anticipate them actually selling it at the end.
Yeah, so they understand that, and then basically we started working directly with Sony. We were completely independent. We signed a production agreement with the university. Okay. Basically, the university, the center, had this public company that they created in order to be able to commercialize. The stuff that they were sure. that they were investigating on, like let's say they created a machine that allow you to vote electronically,
okay.
because that's something that's just became a new thing here in Ecuador. So mm-hmm. the center did that with a team of developers, and they used this company in order to be able to commercialize it, because the university as an entity cannot commercialize this stuff.
Okay, so it's a separate entity.
So it's a separate entity. So okay. Exactly. So basically we ended up working with this company. We started working toward a production agreement, being able to sign some kind of agreement that would leave us secure on what we were doing and what they will get at the end, and that they were not gonna get, like, if we end up selling the game, they end up like owning the whole IP. That was when it went really bad for us. So
right.
we wanted to set really everything straight in order for us to continue working our asses off like we were doing. So
yes.
So we ended up pushing a lot for that. I remember that me specifically, which I was in charge of that. So I started to investigate a lot on what usually you should ask for as an indie, and what you need to know in order to be able to hold on to your creative product. So
and can I ask where did you look to find that kind of information?
Books, internet. Mm-hmm. I read a couple of legal primers. I think there was a book that was called the. I think I don't remember if it was legal primers for game development or business primer for game development. It's either one of those.
Okay.
And even though it was really heavy on on legal stuff, like.
Right.
A lot of lawyer talk. That probably you understand and enjoy.
I love it.
I really was like, okay, I need to get through this because it's important for my company, but nothing else.
Well, the easier way is to just hire a lawyer like me, so you don't have to learn.
Yeah, it's an easier way, but we didn't have a penny at the moment.
Yeah,
so
I understand.
so I ended up doing that. in the end, it really helped because it helped me understand what was an agreement and how it is usually structured. So at least when I get an agreement from Sony or from some other big company, I can read it, and I do know, okay, this is tries to tell me this. This tries to tell me this, and this has to be there in order for us, for both of us, to be able to share information and no one to be no one to be affected in any ways and stuff like that. So I ended up knowing the difference between the distribution agreement and an NDA and all of these sorts of stuff, which was really 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 important for us in the end.
Absolutely.
So I ended up working towards that and trying to make them understand that how things work in the industry, because they really didn't know. So basically what the university wanted was work with us like some kind of other product that they usually sell. Usually when they make an agreement with some kind of company to be able to commercialize stuff, usually they get like 60% of the whole thing, if it's not 80, the university, I mean.
Okay.
So that was really not going to work for us. We weren't going to, like...
Right. I mean, indie games don't make that much money as it is.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
You're losing that much. It's not going to be...
So we were not going to work. Like, we were working at that time, we were working seven days a week at the beginning. Then we switched to six, but we were working 6 days a week. We were working at least 10 hours a day, if it was not 12, even on Saturday. So we were basically destroying ourselves in order to make the best we can do for this game. So we didn't want to give like 60 to 80% to somebody else. I was completely nuts. So I started pushing them, making them see how things work.
In the game industry?
In the game, like, industry.
Voting booths and things like that.
Exactly. Yep. Basically, the value is not in what you want them to see, or at least what I ended up understanding was the value is not in the product itself. Or in the company, neither. Like, if you want to get 60 to 80%, and if you push toward that as an investor, probably you're gonna end up getting it. But once the product is successful, let's say if the product is a $1 billion product success, then that little percentage that you gave to the team, they're gonna get that. They're gonna leave that company alone. Like, they're gonna just get out of there. You're gonna have this asset that's completely useless, and a product that nobody can understand but them, and you'll have to upkeep, and they're gonna just go away and do something else because the value is on the team and not on the product, and neither on the company. So
right, that's a good point.
Exactly. So they're just gonna get another name, uplift another company, and start something else.
Right.
With all the experience that they took from your money, so you're better. Right. You better want them to be happy.
Exactly.
So I exposed all these points to them. I ended up having a good agreement with them. Basically, we own all the IP. They're gonna get around 25%, I believe, 25 to 30%, which is the usual thing that a publisher gets. Like 30% is what they get, but they do a lot more. Right. They are not doing like marketing or any of the sorts. Basically, we're going to handle all of that. So,
but it's a trade-off. I mean, the game wouldn't exist, right?
If it weren't for them.
Yeah.
So we needed the machines. We needed the space. We needed the internet. We needed all this stuff. We needed all the servers that they provide. So they have rightfully earned that 25%.
Right.
So we wanted them to have that, but asking for 60,
yeah,
was way too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, at some point, and this was not something that we blame to the university, but kind of a little bit. think that they were like taking, I don't know who idea it was. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the university or the company that was handling that stuff. But at one point they started like taking in account every little detail, like, okay, so you're using that space is a value in this X value, and you have used it for so many days, so you have to, this is how much we've invested in you. And like that was for every little detail. So we felt that they were trying to get as much as possible with the percentage that they could. So in the end, what I do was using the same strategy that they were using, and I started to take in account every little detail that we're already put in the game. So basically, you have 12 people working 10 hours a day, even on holidays, because we didn't took holidays, mm-hmm. even on Saturdays, which is an extracurricular day for Ecuador. And it and I ended up reading the laws of the freaking country to know that if you work on a Saturday or on a Sunday, you have to pay that day, it's 150% more.
Right, we have
that a normal working day.
Some of that in the U.S.
Something like that. Yeah. And a holiday, it's 200% more. So all this stuff, I taking into account also that a lot of hardware is also from us that they couldn't provide, like the instruments for the music, like the recording studio, which is like, it's really expensive each hour that you spend in a recording studio. But since one of our partners, which basically what we did was basically the whole team, which is 12, we ended up dividing the shares of the company between the 12 of us. Mm-hmm. So one of the shareholders is a sound engineer that has a record company here in Ecuador. So we were really all set with that because he could provide his recording study for us to make the game, the game music. And I took into account all the hours that we spent in there. So in the end, it came out something like a humongous investment from us, which was completely ridiculous. And I knew it, but I told them if there was gonna be like that, like taking into account every little detail, then this is how our side is gonna look.
The game actually costs, right?
Exactly.
Man hours and everything. Yeah.
And they ended up understanding that, and we went into a middle ground. In the end, it went all really well. They have all this percentage back. They have, if we ended up not completing, like, if we ended up not being able to pay them back for what they did, then we gave them the rights to that project. But that's not something that we're like, because we know we're going to give them back all the investment they gave. The game is gonna, at least, I think it's gonna sell a really good quantity of copies in order to be able to break even and up even more. So we're not like we're not worried about that.
Good.
But in the end, we end up getting the IP. We end up getting complete creative control, complete management control. End up getting the largest percentage of the negotiation, and the company is completely ours. They just get percentage in the royalties of the game, not even on the company. So it's even better for us.
So they don't handle any kind of marketing support or anything?
Not at all. Does
Sony handle any of that? Is there any help from them?
Well, as distributors, and the thing is that because of we are also part of the incubation program.
Okay.
They handle some kind of marketing. Like, they invite us to different events. Thanks to them, it's why we went to two E3s, one GDC, one BGS, mm-hmm. One PAX, but that PAX was PAX East, I think, that our game just was showcased, I think, in Vita.
Right.
And this PAX was completely ours. This PAX was that we went, we applied, we did the whole thing, the whole dance, and we ended up being selected.
The Indie Mega Booth, you mean?
Yeah, right. Exactly, okay. The Mega Booth. The good thing was that when Sony heard that we were selected, because I always talking with my account manager at Sony. He's a really good person, Mike Foster. He's in charge of a lot of Latin American teams. He helped us a bunch. So I ended up asking, "Hey, Mike, do you think you can get Unity serial code to be able to deploy a build for packs?" Because usually, when you build a demo with a Unity, mm-hmm. you get up this really ugly watermark that says trial version,
right.
And it's really ugly. So it's good for development because you're not gonna polish anything at the moment.
Sure.
But when you want to showcase, usually when we were gonna showcase with them, usually they provide this key. So I was asking them just to see if we can get one. He told me he was gonna want to see if it was possible, and in the end he did way more than that. Like, he gave me the key, and he ended up putting me in contact with the person that was gonna be in charge of Sony's technical support at PAX. To be able to secure me to PlayStation 4s and to PlayStation Vitas.
Wow.
To showcase the game, so that I do not have to take the ones that are in my office, mm-hmm. which would have, like, I only have one PlayStation 4 test kit to be able to showcase and two PS Vitas, which would have made me carry all that stuff around from Ecuador to Seattle, which is right. a one-day trip.
Right.
So it
That's
was
great.
Really, really nice of him.
What about the TVs and the other equipment? Someone from Indie Mega Booth was telling me that I think Intel is providing that stuff.
Yeah, is Intel provided the big ones, the ones you saw hooked up in the big stands.
Okay.
Usually, that were really tall. Those ones were provided by Intel.
Okay.
And they were provided at a reduced cost. So yeah, it was really really good too. Maybe save a. Maybe save a lot of money. In the end, I think this relationship we've built with Sony and with the university have really benefited us. And if it weren't because of them both, I mean, university and Sony, I mm-hmm. think the game would not be possible. Maybe we would have ended up making the loan. Maybe we, I don't know. I don't know what yeah. we would have been, but they really do deserve all the praise that we already gave them. So I think it's been really helpful to be there. Even though we really want to have our own thing and
sure.
Eventually get our own building and everything to be closer to the city, because that building is really far away from the city.
Okay.
Right. So it's really hard to get out and get in at like late hours or mm-hmm. really early. So,
well, it's one of those things you have to start small, have a few small
exactly.
successes, and then you can build up. And that's great.
Exactly. Exactly. So, even though all that stuff is there, we are really grateful and. I think it will work out really good at the end.
So, when you're in the Indie Mega Booth and you've done appearances mm-hmm. at other shows, what's the reaction been? Have you been getting more fans every time, or I mean, are people enjoying
yes.
the game when they play it?
Yes, a lot of people been enjoying the game throughout the showcases that we've been. Mm-hmm. The first E3 was a really huge thing. Like, Sony. Put us in the spotlight of the E3 Latin American conference, press
okay.
conference.
Okay.
So even though it's not as big as the main E3 Sony's conference,
mm-hmm.
It was a really big deal for Latin Americans to be able to have one of their own.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were in the spotlight because we were the first success case of an academic group that ended up transforming into something more, like into something real for
right.
game development.
Right.
So they sent this team of filmmaker, the film team of Sony,
mm-hmm.
They sent three of them to Ecuador to make some interviews and do the whole thing. So we had like this video on how we were started,
right.
how things were with Sony, and why this alliance with Sony was so important. So they make an interview in that, and they show it through the the day three, it was really, really good. I mean, we became trending in our city, so that's huge. I mean,
yeah,
for us at least.
And we
also ended up showcasing the game to a lot of people, a lot of press, ended up liking it. I mean, Destructoid is one of those sites that really loves the game.
They've
done a couple of incredible articles for us. Also, one of the Destructo guys, that I think he's one of the guys who also did one of the articles, he went by our booth on the Mega booth, and just to ask how we were doing, because he said that the Destructo team really, really liked the game. So we not only make like fans in the consumer side of things, like also we've made a little bit of fans on the press, which is great.
That's where you need the fans, to be honest.
Exactly. There's also this independent blogger, who is called Jonathan Higgins, which I'm really grateful for, because he always goes to every event, and at least for in every event that we've been, so he's always seen a different version of what we're showcasing of the game. So he becomes really, really excited about it, because he really, really loves the game. Like the first time he played it, he played on the Vita. It was, I mean, I swear to you, the Vita version on the first E3 that we went, which was last year's E3, it was running, in my opinion, really, really bad. Like it was too slow, probably at less than 30 frames per second. The loading time between levels was like at least 1 to 1.5 minutes. So it was horrible. But he loved it. He loved the potential idea of the game, which was amazing. then again, he saw it on the next E3 that was this year, and he saw it on PS4. So you see the difference between PS4 and PS3 is huge. So yeah, you can see the whole, even all our textures are hand-painted, so you can see the really big difference in detail. Yeah. Running on 180p, 60 frames per second. So he was completely flabbergasted, which was amazing. He really, like, he was more invested into the game. He liked it even more. And he went also about Megabooth, and he spent a lot of time playing the game. Ended up almost beating the demo, and he wrote a beautiful article about the game. And I think that's the kind of people in the media and in the and on the consumer side too that we wanted to make, like people that really get to understand the game in a more deeper level.
Absolutely.
And really get connected to it emotionally, so that we can get this reaction from them. That's what we want. That's what we want to build.
That's one of the big things you need is a fan base, both in the media and consumers. That
exactly.
Are so and excited the only about way, your game.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And the only way we think we can build that, it's at these kind of events. I don't think it's possible any other way.
Well, I mean, just putting videos on the website and writing blogs and things is not quite enough,
right? Yeah, making all of this, it's good and people get invested. But sitting down, playing the game and experiencing it firsthand, I think it's the best way for them to be able to get more connected to the game.
Yeah,
I know it's not the only way. I mean, a lot of people really like the whole concept of the game and got really excited about it just for looking to the first trailer. And that's also amazing too, but it's a different kind of investment. So I love that both things happen. But also in the events we get the benefit that we can see for ourselves how the game really does, because usually when you work so much in something, you lose a little bit of the idea of how good your game can be. And that you ended up being blind to some stuff and looking some people, other people go at it. It's an eye opener, really. So there was this guy, as I told you, like, as you say, you can get invested with a video, and it's completely true. We had this one guy, Kevin, which he told me he saw the trailer 2 years ago, and he's been waiting for an opportunity to play it since then. And when he saw that the game was in the mega booth, he was really, really excited. And one of the first things he did was coming up to the booth after closing hours the first day, because he was also an exhibitor.
Working there, yeah.
And so I'm playing the whole thing. So I really, really enjoyed that. Like, it was really, it made me feel really, really good, like really happy, because these people that get really invested in the game. I had a lot of people like that in the booth. I had the Mega Booth was the first event that people came up to me and said, "Hey, can I buy this from you right now? Hey, can I pre-order this from you right now?"
Right.
I've never experienced that. Like, always, usually in the other events, I had to, okay, would you buy this for $20? Would you buy this for $15?
Right.
To see how well people received the game. Some of them were like, yeah, maybe, at other events, you know.
Do you think
but here in Mega Booth, here in the Mega Booth,
oh, no, yeah, no, go on. Have you
here
just
in the Mega Booth? Sorry,
sorry. No, please finish your thought.
Okay, so just here in the Mega Booth, people came up to me, and I didn't have to tell that. I didn't have to ask that question, not even once.
Right.
So that was amazing.
That's awesome. Do you think it's just because it's been polished, and the game is just getting better every time, and now it's sort of at a state where, I mean, when I played it felt like a real game. I mean, it basically felt finished to me, at least the part I played.
Yeah, I think so. That's partially because the iteration of the game, it's been better.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Vita version on this time around had loading times around from 10 to 20 seconds, so that's a plus. Also, it ran pretty well, like at least 45 frames per second all levels, so it's great. We've managed to accomplish that. I think we're going to push a little bit more, though. But yeah, I think it's partially because the game is it's more prepared for it to be able to be judged better. But I also think that this kind of event, specifically PAX inside the Indie Mega Booth, mm-hmm. What people are looking for, it's something exciting, new, and completely crazy.
Yeah.
So usually they go into the Mega Booth trying to see which is the crazy thing that the industry has mm-hmm. come up with.
Yep.
So, and that it's also fun, because if it's not fun, you know, you don't have
sure.
a game.
Yeah.
So, I think we are really good on those aspects. I mean, our game is pretty nuts and it's pretty fun, I think. So people really, really end up really liking it.
Yeah. It's stressful. It's just not when I was playing it. Yeah. But I think it controls great. It's one of those things where I didn't want to stop trying.
Exactly. That's the feeling we wanna make the player get. Like, basically, what we built, and how we balance the game, it's that we want the player to make the player to feel that every time you fail, it's because of the player's fault and not
yep.
because the game is cheating
Absolutely.
On you. So that way, you know, as a person, that you can be better, that you can do it better next time. So basically, you're competing against yourself, and that's like the best way to get really addicted to something. Like, you want to beat yourself every time you do something.
Yep.
And what we wanted to do with this game, and every game we do, I mean, we know that games are entertainment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we do not only want it to be entertainment. I mean, it's good for that kind of games to exist. I mean, the games that only provide entertainment to you. But we want the games to be something more. We want the games to be able to provide something everlasting to the player. Like, when you read a really good book, when you end up going to the movies to see a great movie that really changes your perspective in life, like lets you look to your insights and say, "Hey, now I see things differently. Now I know more stuff. Like, and now I got a little bit more out of life because of this particular experience that I had." So that's what we want to live to be, and that's what we want every free creations game to be. So even though we want you to get addicted to this game because of its gameplay, we don't want you to make it in the bad way, like from you to throw all your life and just play to live all day long. Mm-hmm. But we want you to get something out of it. We want you to get a life-changing experience from it. So that's what we're working on, like in both gameplay and story. Once all of them are tied up and we present that to a player, mm-hmm. we want to create this really strong emotional bond. Awesome. That the player will end up carrying through the whole game. And by the end of it, he or she be able to have this everlasting experience that really transcends into his life, his or her life.
Wow. That's a great goal to have. And I hope, when will people be able to play it? When are you looking to release the game?
We still have not a specific release date, okay. But we're working towards having it ready by next year.
Okay,
awesome. I know that's a pretty big window, but there's still a couple of things that we have to iron out in order for us to be able to say, okay, it's going to be released this specific month.
Right.
But yeah, sure, we're going to be, as the year goes by, mm-hmm. I think we're going to be able to be more accurate on that estimate. But right now, we're working as hard as we can to make the game the best it can be. So that's the only thing I can tell you right now.
Okay. Well, where can people find you in order to get updates on the game?
Okay. So what we usually do is we share updates of the game on our Twitter account and on our Facebook account. So our Twitter handle is Freaky Creations.
Okay.
Just like that, all together.
That's easy.
And and Facebook, you can find us the same way.
Okay.
Also, we on our website, we usually share from time to time some blog posts about the developers. Mm-hmm. And our website is freakycreations.net. Usually, we share a lot of media there. There's a bunch of wallpapers that we've been creating throughout the development process. And a lot of concepts and screenshots from the game.
Perfect. Well, thank you for being my guest. It was an awesome story. I mean, it's very exciting to see your first game coming out. So I know.
Thanks.
I'm excited. I'm sure you're even more excited. Right?
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Zach, for inviting me. It was a really great talk.
No problem. You can find me at gamelawyerblog.com to read more on my blog about the legal aspects of game development. And make sure to review us on iTunes, because those reviews really help. I will see you on the next episode of Legal Moves.